And now, Images of the Past is one of our most popular ongoing segments here on Dakota Midday. You can find photos, videos, and stories of South Dakota on our website, sdpb.org/imagesofthepast. Also, educational content has been created to supplement all those great stories and material there. With us here to talk more about Images of the Past, we have SDPB's Steve Rakusik and Brian Gevick in the studios with us. Steve, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. And Brian, thanks for being here as well.
Happy to be here.
Steve, we're going to start with you and talk about educational content for a minute. Give me an overview of what you've developed and what's new.
Okay. Over the last couple of years, we've developed probably close to 65 or 70 different, you know, lesson plans or activity ideas that go along with the, or to augment the resources that Brian's putting together. And these are just little activity ideas or lessons that the teachers or parents can use with kids or students to help learn more about South Dakota history, of course, but also maybe to incorporate some mathematics and some science with that, too.
Give me an idea of how teachers or parents sort of access that material. Where do they find it?
Yeah, we've been going kind of across the state, you know, last couple of years and hit a lot of the teacher conferences and trying to promote it through those venues. And also we have a newsletter we provide once a week during the school year on Thursdays, which we highlight a lot of these resources as they come available.
Steve, when you look at a story, give me an idea where you begin, because one of my favorite things when I first sort of took over the hosting seat was to look back at some of the images of the past, stories that Brian had put together before I arrived, and it was a whole lot of fun, a little history lesson in the state. So where do you begin with those stories, and where do you want to take them?
I'll give you an example, one I'm looking at right now. It's one we call terminal velocity coffee filter, and this one actually...
Of course.
I have a strange name. This one goes along with a story Brian put together about a snowstorm back in 1909 in Sioux Falls. So we kind of got out of the idea, you know, when snow falls, it doesn't fall continuously at an acceleration. So it does slow down and hits the terminal velocity, so it doesn't fall continuously faster. And if
and
we compare
that, for that.
What's that?
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah. So then what works really nice is coffee filters for a comparison for this. So if you take one coffee filter and drop it, which I'll show Brian here, it's actually very soothing. And it drops really slow because it meets terminal velocity. And this, if you're not interested in doing this for the lesson, this actually does help lower blood pressure too, just to watch these things fall. It's so soothing. But what's nice about the coffee filter is if you add now two or three coffee filters to it, your surface area does not change, but the overall mass or the weight does. So the gravity is still the same, but now, and so is the frictional forces. So only thing we change now is the weight of that object. So then it drops a little faster. And if you continue to do this, and the kids do this, they can graph that, and what they'll see is a nice curved function in which eventually you get to the point where at a distance you drop it, the terminal velocity will be met.
So Steve Zwemke comes on today and has me stress eating Halloween candy with his creepy stories of haunted places, and then Steve Rakusik comes in and calms me down with a coffee filter. That's why we love South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
It is Halloween.
and snow is on the way. Brian, let's talk about images of the past this week. I spent a good amount of time learning about sugar beets this morning. Tell me a little bit about our new contributor that we're going to hear from in the future.
We will be hearing from the Tri-State Museum in Belfouche, South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, they have an exhibit running about the Belfouche sugar beet plant. They processed sugar there from about 1926 or 7 until 1965. They were actually growing sugar beets in that area as early as 1887. Not surprisingly, Seth Bullock, who was kind of a big shot around Belfouche at the turn of the 20th century, wanted to see more development in that area. So he was one of the first backers of it. Farmers started to grow more and more sugar beets. They were shipping all of these beets out by rail. There are pictures of that on the site. But eventually they realized that, you know, if we would just keep this here, we would have a nice little industry going. And they did do that for many, many years. There are pictures on the site now of the cornerstone of the sugar plant being laid. There are shots of the first bag of sugar ever produced there going out, the first rail car full of sugar ever going out from Belle Fourche. Its destination, by the way, was Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and the Manchester Biscuit Factory. am I too far in the weeds now with this?
No, I'm joking. I was thinking while I was hearing both of you talk, just you never are going to run out of ideas, are you, Brian? You're always going to walk through the next newspaper article, the next town, and find something lying there historically that you can tell a story around. That fascinates me about you. How do you sort of keep your curiosity open for this state?
You know, if you go to almost any town, they're going to have some display of their own history. The larger the town, usually the larger the display. Some towns have full-size museums. Some may just have a case at the local courthouse. But that's where the ideas come from. You see an artifact and you think, what is that? Or you see a photo and you think, that has some significance that I don't understand. And you pursue that. And inevitably, you will learn things that you had no idea, existed, or stories that come up that were new to you. I have more ghost stories, but we're going to put those aside for a while.
Oh, I don't know. We better get one of them out there today. Tell me one ghost story, Brian. Well, tell me a good one.
Okay, all right. This is tied to another one of our Images of the Past contributors, Deadwood History, Inc. They they are the oversight group for the Adams House and Museum in Deadwood. That was another haunted house that was featured on a cable television show, and there are stories about one of the former inhabitants, maybe W.E. Adams himself, who still kind of rambles around the place, and caretakers in particular are careful not to talk too far out of school, but I am told that at one time people would actually come in the morning to go to work and they would greet Mr. Adams just to say, "Hey, it's me, it's okay, we're all fine here." But it's, the usual kind of thing that lights are going on when they shouldn't be. And that is also true of the Pettigrew House and Museum in Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. I know of one individual who worked there who closed up the museum one night, and he absolutely was certain that he shut off the lights in Mr. Pettigrew's library. He went out onto the street, he looked back at the building, and the lights were on. Yeah.
And he just kept going home.
He kept going.
He's like, I'm never going to stay on. That's
yep.
it.
That was all
somebody else can.
Yep.
And Steve Rakusik, as a scientist, you have to be the skeptic here, right?
I'm a little scared right now.
The Halloween candy. So, tell me, sort of, Steve, where do you kind of dig? What makes you see snow and think coffee filters? What makes you see a picture of sugar beets and think about their chemical components, for example?
Well, like one thing, the first thing I kind of think of, like, for example, when Brian mentioned the sugar beets, to me it looks at comparing, the amount of energy in carbohydrates compared to fats and maybe some kind of a burning activity. But the thing I like to do, I guess, is developing the lessons for these is to do something that is inexpensive, that if you're at home doing this with your kids or at the school, sure, you can get this stuff from your kitchen and or from your pantry and stuff that's there, inexpensive, and that you can actually learn from.
I'm broadcasting here from the University of Sioux Falls. You folks are in Vermilion and our studio's there, so I can't see you, Steve. Do you have anything else in front of you that you want to, you're very good at bringing stuff into the studio.
A submarine.
I got a little submarine here. This all actually right. goes along with something called Density Just Right, and this goes along with one we did on the Evans Plunge in Hot Springs. Brian put this together a while back. And this one looks at it was a pop bottle, and there's fishing weights attached to it on the bottom. And then inside of it, we have some fishing line and a balloon inside of it. So what I can do right now is I can actually, and right now this pop bottle is on the bottom of a tank of water. And I can slowly add air to this using a little hand pump. And what will happen is that the submarine will slowly rise to the surface. And this looks at changing density by displacing the water. And then once we displace the water and it goes out, the submarine slowly goes up. Because our density of the submarine is less than density of water, I can then release that. And eventually then the submarine will go back down. because eventually the water goes back in there, displaces the air, and the submarine then dives back down.
And Brian Gevick makes the sound, dive, dive. So I have been on a real submarine, and I can tell you they make that real sound when they go down with the lights, and it's like in the movies.
Yep,
so we all dive, we all dive down.
It's an inexpensive way to do this with fishing weights and a pop bottle. So every time a kid maybe has a pop, they'll think about density and think about submarines and ballast tanks and how that moves up and down.
And they'll have some tonight with their Sugar Rush for Halloween. Brian, do you want to take our last 30 seconds here to leave us with another ghost story from South Dakota?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many. I wonder if I can do this quickly. I went into a former house of ill repute in Deadwood when I was working out there with a local media organization. We went in there with a so-called ghost hunters. This is back in the 1980s, so he had a cassette tape recorder. Remember those? And he put this cassette tape recorder in this closet, and he recorded the entire night. He just had this thing running on a long, long loop, and then he went through it bit by bit, and he just listened to it at high volume to see if he could hear any background sounds, any background, you know, speaking, anything like that, and he did. And I heard it.
Brian is shaking here right now.
I am. Yeah. I need another coffee filter. But it was fairly clear. This voice was saying, "Are you sleepy?" And this other voice said, "Sure am." You can hear
it. Get your coffee filters.
Okay.
And
everybody
decompress. Brian Gevick, Steve Rakusik, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
And you can find a story of the Sugar Beet Factory in Belle Fouche online, sdpb.org/images of the past, as well as all our other images of the past.